welcome along to another episode of It's Not a Sport Podcast. We're on to episode 5. I'm joined in studio by Ronan Mullen. Ronan, hello.
And we're
been,
back.
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah.
Have you missed your fix of obscure sports?
I have. I'm looking forward to surfing. Because it wouldn't be something I'm overly au fait with. Home and away, maybe. That's the closest I've gotten to surfing.
Have you ever surfed at all?
No.
See, I always thought it was a strange, like, I just assume everyone has tried surfing at some point in their life, but not everyone grew up on the west coast of Ireland, so.
Yeah. I probably have picked up a surfboard at one point, but I don't think I've ever actually, like, I can't say I've ever surfed, no, I don't think so.
Well, one of the bizarre things about Donegal is that it's actually the surf capital of Ireland.
Wow.
And Ireland's kind of the surf capital of Europe, so.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, there's loads of people come to, like, well, it would be mostly Sligo to Bundoran, and Bundoran would be at the bottom of Donegal, so it's a really big surfing town. But at the same time, even though there's all this, all the waves, it has perfect conditions, it's just made for people to come and visit it. The tourism wouldn't be that great in it.
Mm.
So it's just another one of those situations where, you know, Donegal is kind of isolated up by itself.
It's one of the times when Ireland's painful wind comes in handy. Yeah.
Well, that's it. So I was actually going to ask you what your experience of surfing was and how you enjoyed it.
You have to
how
tell
you
me.
Enjoyed getting crashed down by the Atlantic Ocean, but you've never tried it.
I've
so
never tried it,
awkward.
And I don't know what to tell you.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, you tell me.
It is soul destroying.
Really? Yeah.
Because no matter how good that you get at it, you're still at the whims of the Atlantic Ocean or whatever ocean you're surfing in. So getting crashed by the waves is one of the most terrifying experiences of your life. So you catch a wave and then the wave just destroys you.
Yeah.
And you go face first into the ocean and you're twirling around doing somersaults.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I'm never coming back, but then obviously
there's an inevitability about it, I presume, where it doesn't matter how well you're doing, at a certain point you just know that's gonna happen. So
yeah, well, you could be out in the ocean for roughly about 3 or 4 hours and maybe catch 4 waves. So that's a give or take. But it's great for hangovers. It's great for hangovers.
What do you mean?
So if you go out, like, the surfing lifestyle is a little bit different to you know, your average lifestyle. Most people doing it are just doing it as a hobby, so they go away for the weekend. Obviously, they have a few cans in the pub or a few pints in the pub. Then they get up at 7 a.m. and go for a swim in the freezing cold water. But it's great for the hangover. You have to try it sometime.
Have you got any surfing terminology for me?
I actually don't.
Gnarly. That's a sick wave. I don't know.
I don't know.
This is based off Saved by the Bell, which is probably slightly before your time.
I'm like a year younger than you.
Bell? Saved by the Bell, yeah. Yeah. That was a big.
I know what Saved by the Bell is.
Yeah, but you're.
I'm not 6 years old.
Have you seen it?
Yes, it was on TV when I was younger.
All right, I thought that was 90s, John. Yeah, I don't know.
What age are you?
I'm 26.
Well, I'm 23, so, I mean, give or take.
I thought you would have just missed the sweet spot, though.
No. Well, I'm from Donegal, so everything in Donegal is kind of like 5 or 6 years behind everything else anyway, so.
Fair enough.
I saw Saved by the Bell.
The more people have seen it, the better. But yeah, that's my point.
We've gone on a bit of a tangent here.
Surfing in Saved by the Bell and Home and Away, that's all I got.
Well, thankfully, we have a guest to actually tell us about this. I went up to Bundoran, like I said, and I met up with Richie Fitzgerald.
The mecca of surfing?
The mecca of surfing. He's a professional surfer, or a former professional surfer, and a big wave surfer, which means that he chases the biggest waves possible. And he actually broke the record for that in Europe and in Ireland back about 19 years ago. And he spoke to me about that and the different aspects of surfing, and also kind of, you know, the technicalities of it, first of all, but also the lifestyle of it and why people do it, and also the dangers around the sport as well. So have a listen.
Get, you know, fellas and girls that are coming up as part of a group or to, you know, on a stag night or, you know, for the lifestyle side of it, and then you've got your surfer that is dedicated, and he or she just thinks about the waves and having the right equipment and to be able to chase swells, whether it's County Clare or Waterford or Port Rush or Bundoran or Rosnaila or whoever it is. And then you have the next level, you know, someone who's good enough to make a living at it or be a competitive surfer even on a local level. So they're you know, committing everything they can to try and be the best they can be. You know, most of it's on an amateur level. You have to be extremely lucky and extremely talented, whether you're just a regular competitive surfer that makes money from it, or whether you're a big wave surfer that is able to make a living for it. It's a tiny percentage of people. You don't have the downward flow of money like you would in football, or you know, rugby, or any of those, tennis, or any of the other regular sports. The industry is big. It's a global industry, but just the trickle down of money, because surfing's not a bums on seats type of sport. You don't have it. It's not a stadia sport. Mm-hmm. So it's quite hard to kind of get a grips to how much is paid out in an event, or how many people have watched this or that or the other. So it's for professional surfers, unless you're really near the tip of the spear, it's a very, very hard sport to be a professional at.
And what age did you decide that you wanted to put all your eggs in the surfing basket competed at a professional level?
Oh, look, I was like any other Irish kid, you know, growing up here in football, and was fishing, and there was all the rest of it. I got good fast at surfing, I guess, in the 80s, and you know, I competed from straight off the bat, and went to a European and a World Surfing Championships in 88 and 1990 and 92, the year Donegal won the All-Ireland. I remember it well. I think it was in France for the World Championships the weekend after that. So it was just through that was amateur competing, and then, you know, you go into pro-am events, and, you know, going into some professional events. And it was a different structure back then. It's structured quite differently now. It was more broken and not as kind of as structured as it is now. And then, obviously, you know, I signed a few professional contracts with a few different companies, and, you know, started to make a name for myself in the big wave scene, paddling scene, and then the tow scene came, and, you know, I was being sponsored as a professional surfer, whether I competed or not, for, you know, as just what I was able to do on big waves. And, you know, that was kind of the pinnacle of my career, I suppose. And, you know, I did well out of it for about 15 years, and obviously I've stood back a little bit in the last few years, of course I have, but you know, time and tide waits for no man. But you know, when it lasted, it was absolutely fantastic. I had a blast and got to travel, and I've been around the world a few times.
Yeah, and is it as dramatic as people like to make it out? Like some people can say that there's actually a lot of fighting that goes on in the professional surfing world, where if you steal someone's wave or you cut across someone's path, that can cause a lot of ruckus, you want to say, in the water?
Yeah, I mean, there's structures and rules and regulations and contests. So, you know, if anyone's bothered watching professional surfing on TV or online, there's, you know, 11 million people or something watch the last event. So it is a well-structured competitive scene, but there's competitiveness in it. You know, you're obviously, if you listen to the commentators, you'd swear all the professional surfers loved each other, but that's not true. There's, you know, regional differences, there's territoriality. You've got, you know, South African guys aren't going to get on with the Aussies, and vice versa, and the Kiwis and the Americans. So there is a bit of friction, but generally in surfing, it is a sport of kind of territoriality, like you get in most sports. You know, you'll have your locals from certain areas, and they don't want, you know, guys from outside and girls from outside of town coming in and, you know, pushing them aside. So it's a little bit of an ebb and flow, but you get that in most societies. But from a competitive point, no, there is a little bit of argy-bargy, and, you know, you see some of it on screen, but it's probably not as friendly and as lovely as they portray it. There's definitely a competitive edge, yes.
And you were speaking there of different nations. Surfing's obviously a global sport. The waves are fairly similar. They might be different sizes, different riffs, different currents that might make an impact. Do you think, is there a different style for, say, a South African surfer? Would he have a different style of surfing to an Aussie, to an Irishman?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that changes with time. You know, there's been a huge wave of Brazilian surfers in the last 5 or 6 years have suddenly come out of nowhere, really. Well, not nowhere. There's always been good Brazilian surfers, but they've come to the higher end, like the top, you know, most of the top 20 seem to be Brazilians now. So, you know, and then in my era, it was very much California, Australia based, and, you know, for a few years in the mid-noughties, there was a lot of Europeans, but that's backed off a little bit again. But You know, no, there is, to answer your question directly, yeah, of course, there's different styles, you know. Some of the Californian surfers would be some of the most stylish surfers in the world, and, you know, the Australians would probably have more of a powerhouse background and, you know, be a lot stronger type surfers. But, you know, I was talking today to a friend of mine, Garoge MacDade, who's Ireland's top surfer. He was in today, and, you know, we have guys like Conor McGuire, Garoge MacDade, that are on the world stage and that are every bit as good as anyone you will see globally. So for me, like, what I get a lot of joy out of seeing is that progression in Irish surfing. And we do have our own unique style. We've got, you know, unbelievably fantastic waves on the Irish coast. We don't have a lot of world class of anything in Ireland, but we do have world class waves. But I think at last we're starting to have really world class surfers to match the waves that we have. And now you see a lot of the top pro surfers coming through Bundoran or Eastkey or Strandhill or wherever they're coming to surf, or County Clare, and we have surfers that are of, you know, the highest caliber and can rub shoulders with these fellas now. So to me, that's the main progress. Like, our surfers have become much, much better over the last 10 years, yeah, especially the last 5 years.
And Ireland's actually become a bit of a hotbed in Europe in terms of surfing.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years, I've noticed a definite growth in the industry.
Yeah, Ireland's...
Why do you think that we were so far behind to begin with? Because it's not just yesterday that the waves decided to turn up on the West Coast.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I've seen it ebb and flow over the years. I think, you know, it got busy from the inside out, and now it's a lot of the overseas surfers are coming, you know, from the outside in. The big wave stuff is definitely, it's got global appeal. I mean, everyone wants to see someone ride a giant, enormous wave, and everyone wants to see the wipeouts, and Ireland's at the top of the pile. There's nowhere better. It's a few equals, the Hawaiian Islands and, you know, Nazaré in Portugal, and outside of that, you know, Mullach Moor and Aliens are every bit as good. But it depends on, like, the economic circumstances of a country. I mean, I think there was a huge drop off in the last 10 years in surfing due to, you know, recession, and people don't spend, there's a lot of immigration, and we lost a lot of our kind of young professional crowd. So it just seems to be picking up again in the last couple of years. So surfing's not immune to the ebbs and flow of the economy or what's popular or what's, you know, what's the cool sport to do. So it does get busier every year, but definitely the shape of how surfing is progressing changes.
And Bundoran, especially in Ireland, as well, in Donegal anyway, yeah, it's kind of the capital of surfing within Donegal. Why do you think that is? And secondly, how do you grow it even more? Yeah. Because it seems to be that the tourism industry in Ireland just isn't doing Bundoran any favours, and it's definitely not highlighting what is here and what's, like, we have world-class waves out there.
Look, it probably, you know, we've been talking about this locally. We need to get an annual event that highlights it, whether it's a world qualifying series or a WCT, which is the top bracket. The Bundoran is what it is as a town. You know, you can take or leave the town if you want, but the surroundings are beautiful. You have dramatic mountains, and we have absolutely world-class surf. So, you know, the reason Bundoran's so well-known globally for surfing isn't, as I say, anything magical to do with the town. It's to do with the waves we have off the coast, the Peak and Pampa and Mullach Moor, just which is in Sligo, but it's on the cusp of Bundoran, and, you know, we've all these amazing waves, and that's just a natural phenomenon. I've traveled a lot, and you see incredible places everywhere, but we have a really high concentration of world-class waves in a very small stretch of coast, and that's what makes Bundoran special.
Do you think you could tie it in with Sea Sessions? Because that's definitely growing as a festival, a music festival, and a kind of a gathering of people, so it would definitely have, you'd already have the people coming.
Yeah, like, we do have there is an event attached, the surfing event, to Sea Sessions, but it you know, it is superseded by the music side of the festival, and that's no harm to the guys that organise Sea Sessions. It's a brilliant event, but, you know, it is in June, and the waves aren't fantastic in June and July. It kind of turns on in August. So Sea Sessions definitely highlights it, and it's a brilliant event. Probably if there was a world-class surfing event, it would have to be almost a separate entity, or maybe run in conjunction but not as part of a music event. You kind of have to separate the two rather than just have it anecdotal. But, you know, I do think that in the future, probably kind of August, September, October would be a great time to hold an event. And as I say, we were very, very close about 10 years ago to having a CT event here, but, you know, economic downturn within the surf industry and all the rest of it put that ashore. But I would be surprised in the next few years if you don't see something pop up in, you know, Strandhill, the Hinch, Bundoran, or in some kind of way, because we do have the professional surfers now in Ireland that legitimize it. And of course, we have the waves and the industry is pretty strong here.
Yeah. And just finally, because I know you're showing
no,
time,
no problem.
When you're riding one of those big waves, because I know you did one a few years ago that was, it was a record breaker in Ireland.
Yeah.
What's going through your mind at that moment in time?
Like, we were lucky enough to hold the European record for, you know, it was 50 feet or 55 feet or something for a few years, myself and Gabe Davies, for, you know, one of the heaviest swells ever ridden. And it got a lot of global recognition that year and around that. Like anything, you know, adrenaline, fear, anxiety, joy, you don't overthink it, or you wouldn't do it. If you actually rationally thought about what you were doing, you wouldn't do it. So it's fast, and it comes and goes, you know, quite fast, but it's quite aggressive and quite a violent situation to be in. You know, if you look at it on a TV screen, it looks beautiful because someone's shooting it from the bluff or the headland. But when you're out there, you know, there's a huge amount of noise, there's a huge amount of violence going on around you. I mean, angry seas is not a pleasant experience, but you go in there as calculated as you can, and you kind of have to have a professional edge to it.
Can you remember when you caught the wave? Riding it?
I have good little glimpses of it. Because your field of vision, you know, you're not standing there with a measuring tape, or you're not able to take in a 360 view of yourself on the wave. So you're quite narrow focused, and you'll only really see the third of the wave in front of you. And, you know, the wave could be 100 foot or it could be 20 foot above you, but you're not really looking up into the sky. You have to focus very much on, I used to always focus on the channel. We would see like a jet ski or a person's head or a support boat or a seagull or something in the channel, and I would always set my target and kind of set my line and go, that's where I'm going to end up. Whether you did or didn't depended on how the wave would present itself. But it would just be choosing your line and backing yourself. It was really important to back yourself, be confident.
It's a bit of an odd situation when you're doing this historic thing, and while you're in it, you can't really concentrate on how big of a moment it is.
Yeah, I do. You know, I've been lucky enough to rub shoulders with top surfers, you know, and like Kelly Slater and all these guys. And I, you know guys from rugby and football and martial arts and, you know, real, real top fellas. And, you know, you get to talk to them a little bit. I'm not putting myself in that same category, but, you know, there's similarities. And I think if you rehearse something and you're really confident in your physical ability and you're mentally strong and you're physically strong and you back your equipment, it becomes not second nature and you don't get blasé or arrogant about it, but you're able to do it and you're able to react to maybe a tricky situation, or if you get a huge bit of chop running up the face, and if you do fall off and you do the nightmare scenario and you do get sucked over the falls on a 40-foot wave, that you've got the fitness and just that you have to relax in those situations or you're going to get into a lot of trouble or even worse. I remember talking to a friend of mine who played professional rugby for Leinster, and he just said, you know, he all his points kicked the night before in his mind, and then when it comes to the game day, you know, you don't have to overthink it. And that's always the way I used to like to approach it. It's not arrogant and it's not blasé, but you back yourself.
Yeah. What was it like watching back the video of you?
You're always going to be quite proud of yourself. You know, that's going back a few years now, you know, probably 10 years ago. But, you know, you kind of look at it, and sometimes I find it really hard to watch anything with me in it because I've seen it enough. So I kind of like to watch what all the new guys are doing out there. But, you know, every now and then someone will bring it up, like yourself here. And, you have to think back and be proud and, you know, kind of go, was that really me on that wave? But it was a younger version of myself. So no, I'm still pretty proud of it, to be honest.
Nowadays, you're not riding those big waves. You're running a surf shop and a surf school here in Bundoran. How have you found the transition into that? And how have you found teaching young people how to surf?
Yeah, like we've had a surf business here. This is actually our 29th year, so we're here a long, long time. There's not many people in Ireland who've been here that long. I enjoy it. So, you know, we have the cafe and the surf school and rentals and surf shop and the whole lot here. I'm aware it's just a small business in the northwest of Ireland, but if you didn't enjoy it, you wouldn't do it. And we do have a very active surf school here with, like, you know, dozens of kids in every day. And, you know, there's a certain amount of joy to that, watching people learning to surf. But it's just nice to be in the mix, you know. I still get to see the top guys, the bottom guys, the kids, you know, the first timers, the traveling professionals, you know, Americans coming over on golf and surfing trips. So it is quite interesting. There's no demographic is ever the same any day. We just meet, you know, someone from County Tyrone one day, someone from Southern California the next, and they all want to experience surfing or get surf advice or rent a surfboard or do a lesson. And, you know, you build up a good rapport with customers. So it keeps me, I suppose, it keeps me in the game.
Down, it's the upbeat, make it complete. So what's the story? Guaranteed accuracy, enhanced CD. Latest technology, darts at treble 20. Huge non-recoupable advance, majors be vigilant. I excel in both content and deliverance. So let's put on our classics and we'll have a little dance, shall we? No sales pitch, no media hype. No hydro, it's nice and ripe. I speak in communications in bold type. This ain't your archetypal street sound. Scan for ultrasounds, north, south, east, west, and all round. And then to the underground.
You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Let's push things forward. You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend.